This is WHFR Dearborn, live from the studios here at Henry Ford Community College. It's the new WHFR Journal, local news and views. Good afternoon. This is the new WHFR Journal, local news and views from Henry Ford Community College, although the opinions expressed on the show are not necessarily those of anyone else here at Henry Ford Community College. My name is Jay Koronick. I'm station advisor at WHFR-FM, and I'm happy to be with you as host of the show. Local news and views. We take the stories from the local newspapers, the weekly newspapers. Boy, that's a lot better than some of the big-time dailies. And you know which two those are. And we try to look at what's going on and read some background into them, since I've been living in this area all my life and in Dearborn for about three decades now. It's hard to believe. And I still don't understand what's going on at times. And we always tell you on the show, you know, that you should never believe on so-called face value. Of course, you can't see my face. First-time hearing, just because somebody's on the radio or TV, that what they're saying is true, okay? If it inspires you, if it amazes you, I know that's probably rare on from this show, but then you need to do some more research. You need to check it out. You need to think about it and then draw your own conclusions about it, too. So we are here to give you some ideas that maybe the commercial media, commercial news affiliates do not, and to have you figure out whether or not it's totally valid, and then you act on your conclusion. Ooh, that's what an educated person would do. That's the old college-educated model, and of course, something to be aspired to by everybody, whether you've gone to college or not, of course. So I have to begin with clearing the phlegm out of my past show, because I got some information wrong. Yes, it can even happen to me. And of course, I always tell you, don't listen to me alone. But thank you to one of our listeners, and also thank you to the Department of Public Information at the City of Dearborn, who sent again the information about Dearborn's public service days, which are already off and running, but they've changed the guidelines a little bit. And I was basically upset with so many rules and regulations in our society, and especially in Dearborn, about trash pickup, snow removal, and now public service days, getting so complex that now, and this is true, they feel they have to put signs up in every neighborhood by the streets, I assume, in those so-called easements. So look out, because every block or so, somebody's going to get a city sign about parking regulations on these public service days, and also try to explain which days are public service days. But I did get two things wrong that were in the first press release. My apologies, certainly, to Department of Public Information, the City of Dearborn. Let's get this straight here. So I'm just going to correct what I got wrong. Public service days. Those are days, by the way, in case you don't know, that the city tries to make the neighborhood cleaner. Typically, it's street sweeping. Okay? And I have talked to a few people in the last week, and they say, what the heck does that do? They come down the street, three or four big monster sweepers. They must cost $100,000 or more each. Big brushes, you know, drivers sitting up 12, 15 feet above ground. And they all take the dirt from the side of the road and sweep it from the curbs and sweep it into the middle. So there it is in the middle. Oh, and they wet it down too, so it doesn't blow around, like blow off the street. because you wouldn't want it to blow off the street and have dirt on people's grounds or yards. Well, I have to admit, I don't understand, as a few other people I've talked to, we don't understand the value of street sweeping. Okay, I understand about leaf removal if you allow people to put leaves next to the curbs, of course. That gets in the way of parking. It's a fire hazard. What is this street sweeping all about? You know, I don't really. I mean, every now and then I try to look at things as an innocent, like I have a certain disease and I can't remember any background or any past. Why do we do it that way? What is the actual value? And I'm sure there is some, but it seems to me, and a few other people I mentioned, they can't understand what the street sweeping is all about either. Because the dirt just gets wetted down and swept in the center of the street. It's not vacuumed up, to my knowledge. Now, they could do other repairs. If there aren't cars there, other repairs. Now, one side benefit is, and I got this wrong, because when the public service days first started, they were the day after your weekly trash pickup. So if your trash pickup was on Tuesday, the public service days would be Wednesday. Not true. Okay, somebody said it changed last year. I don't know. I didn't hear that. But it clearly says here that it's the same day. And I got that wrong last week. It is the same day as your trash pickup, but only twice a month. Only the first trash pickup day in the first full week of the month. And the first trash pickup day on the third, 2 weeks later, third full week of the month. And I, you know, ask a question because it wasn't in the first sentence of the press release. It was in the last sentence of the paragraph. And you know how I rail on this show about people that only read part of stories? Well, it happens to all of us, doesn't it? Or it shouldn't happen. But because the devil is in the details. I'm sorry, God is in the details. And if you don't read it all the way through, you won't get the right spin on what's going on. Okay? That's the detail quotes there, those are actually famous either way. Okay, I mean, historically, you know, look them up in some dictionary of quotes, Bartlett's dictionary of quotes or something. But God is in the details, and the devil is in the details. All depends on what those details are, I guess. Okay. In any event, the first full week, I said, I don't know when that is. When is the first week? Is it Sunday or Monday? The first full week starts on a Monday of each month. Okay, the first full week starts on the first Monday of each month. And then the third full week of every month has to be starting on the Monday, but 2 weeks after that first Monday of the month. Okay, so don't just count, I don't know, some other way. Hope that's clear. However, I have to say, with day planners and calendars, the vast majority I've seen, the first day of the week is Sunday, not Monday. Okay? So, again, don't listen to anything else that's going on here. All right? And, of course, it does make some sense that you don't include Sunday because they can't work on Sunday unless you pay them overtime. Okay, so it's the first business day of the week, and weeks do start with Monday now, and so they're counting on those business weeks, okay, which a business week, of course, does start on Monday. I do think, now that I'm straight on this, or semi-straight, semi-crooked, is the glass half full or half empty? I'm either semi-straight or semi-crooked on this story now. Anyway, it is a great idea that for those that find it difficult to remember when the public service day is, when you have to move your car from the curbside, okay, that is on the same day as your trash pickup, although only twice a month. But it wouldn't hurt if you're, you know, want to make it simpler for yourself, and if it's no big trouble, is to move your car into your driveway, into your garage, or somewhere else on every trash pickup day. Because as they point out, and this is why this is was a beautiful idea, even though trash and the recycling trucks can come down the street with cars parked there. I mean, they work around that. You know, not our city of Dearborn. Well, you can't clean the curb at the curb. You know, of course, you can't sweep the curb if there's a car sitting there. But the trash people and the recycling people, they'll work around parked cars, but now they don't have to. if everybody follows this principle. And so actually, trash and rubbish, the city should get a little discount on trash pickup services because they are making sure, as best they can anyway, that most of the cars will be off the street and it'll actually be easier. Straight shot right on down. Remember, and it mentions this here in the latest press release from the city, which is dated yesterday, September 4th, that no one, and I've seen this mistake, no one should put their trash barrels or the recycling barrels in the street or on the curb. It should be just inside the curb on the so-called easement, grass or whatever you have there. Okay? And I see a lot of people put, because they don't want to, squish down their grass. Oh, that would be terrible. So they put the trash barrels in the street next to the curb, and that is wrong. That'll get you in trouble. But the cars in the street, those got the cost here, will get a starting in October, they'll put a warning on your car, a warning sticker this month. In October, a citation will cost from $35 to $70. And I don't know why the difference. What, an SUV is $70, and or you get two cars? I don't understand the sliding scale there for the citation of parking your car at the curb in front of your house on the day, on the public service day. I don't know, but that's what it says here. Now, also, you say, well, 35 at 70, no big deal. I actually have a job. Well, good for you. You're very lucky. But no, the towing, when they tow away your car, then you have to pay the cost of the tow. And I'm just guessing, but I bet it's $100 or more, maybe 75. Depends who they hire to bring in to tow the cars away. So you'll have to pay the towing and the city citation. So there you go. Now, on my street, I live in East Dearborn next to a large, in a residential area, but we're next to a large apartment complex. And we often get the overflow of cars that don't find room enough on the streets in the apartment complex that they park in front of the residential homes. Oh, they're going to be sorry in October. Oh, boy. Well, anyway, hopefully they'll see the big new signs that are going up on the easement. I wonder how they're going to work my street. My street, get this, doesn't have an easement. The easement is the area between the curb and the sidewalk. Aha, we don't have any sidewalks in my area. So there, no sidewalks. Isn't that cool? That, which means we're not required by law, by Dearborn law, to shovel the snow off of our sidewalks because we don't have any. Isn't that a cool idea? Yeah. Well, of course, there's downsides. You know, that means, you know, I don't have a through street, pardon the expression. It's called a cul-de-sac, okay, without giving a lot away. So that's why we get away from having sidewalks. And because you wouldn't want kids or other people trying to be out for a walk to have to walk in the street. That could be dangerous as putting your trash barrels in the street. Okay, so there's the complete story. Straightened that out. We got it all clear thanks to one of our loyal listeners, Marianne, for also sending an email about that. We'll get it straight eventually. Well, it's very exciting, not for Andy Dillon, who is the State House Speaker in Dearborn Heights. We had reported that according to ruling here in the state of Michigan, his recall campaign failed because of problems with the petitions. So here's the story. What happened, and you may have heard this, was also, this is from the Press Guide last Sunday. It was in the Times Herald this last Wednesday. So take a look at this from Sean Delaney in the Press and Guide from last Sunday. After falling 776 signatures short of placing a proposal to recall State House Speaker Andy Dillon on the August ballot, supporters of the recall campaign could get another shot this November. A ruling handed down Wednesday from United States District Court Judge Robert Holmes Bell would force Michigan Secretary of State Terry Lynn Land, to re-examine 2,053 signatures that were declared invalid during a petition drive earlier this year, and if at least 776 are determined to be legitimate, out of those 2,053, that's like one-third, just one out of three, the proposal to recall Dillon could appear on the November ballot. And Leon Drolet, who is executive director of the Michigan Taxpayers Alliance, who supported the recall effort, said, "This is a huge win for the rights of Michigan citizens." Dylan, who also, end of quote, Dylan, who also represents North Dearborn Heights, is already scheduled to appear on the ballot once. The embattled lawmaker is seeking re-election this year and secured enough votes in August to move on to the general election on November 4th. So he was the highest vote-getter of the Democrats. And he was opposed by three or four others. And it's interesting if those three or four others could have got their act together and got everybody to vote for just one of them, then it wouldn't have been Dylan. In other words, he got a plurality, not the majority of the votes cast, unless I'm mistaken on that, too. That's my recollection. In any event, Dylan will appear on the ballot a second time if recall supporters can prove at least 8,724 of the 15,737 signatures that they submitted to the Michigan Secretary of State on May 1st are legitimate. Now, only 7,948 were validated by Land's office, that's Secretary of State Land's office, earlier this year. 2,053 were rejected because they were allegedly collected by petitioners residing outside of Dylan's district. But recall supporters argued in federal court that under state law, some of the signatures were rejected as unconstitutional, and Bell agreed. He said, this is the judge's statement, "The circulation of recall petitions is core political speech," Bell wrote, saying that recall organizers' First Amendment rights were being severely burdened by the state law. "The First Amendment states that Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging," I love this part, "the freedom of speech or of the press, or the right of people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances." So that's the last part there. And, of course, he's quoting the First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States of America. Unquote. But supporters of the recall campaign say that their First Amendment rights were violated when Land disregarded more than 2,000 signatures here. And Drolet, again head of the recall campaign, said politicians are at-will employees of the citizens. He was referring to Representative Dylan. Representative Dylan raised tax, then fought to deny citizens' constitutional right to hold him accountable for his actions. Unquote. Recall supporters claim that Dylan was targeted for a recall late last year after voting in favor of a tax increase in order to balance the state's budget. But Dylan's press secretary, Greg Byrd, says the lawmaker was unfairly targeted and claims the recall group used illegal tactics to obtain signatures. Byrd said, quote, "This entire campaign was based on forgery and fraud. We think the ruling is unfortunate," unquote. Byrd said Dylan is considering taking further legal action, which could include an emergency appeal of Bell's decision. And, of course, said, "We're going to consider all our legal options before we proceed," blah, blah, blah. So get the lawyers going. Here we go, folks. That's my comment. But supporters of the recall effort say they're the ones being targeted and have criticized their opponents for using thug-like tactics to intimidate and harass petitioners. Yeah, first of all, even though there's a recall petition out there, if he's such a wonderful representative, and I know from many people that he is and that they like Representative Andy Dylan, I've had no direct experience. And I just know that as, you know, head of the House majority, the Democrats in our state House, he has done some things to solve our terrible budget crises, and it must be a very difficult job. So I have nothing bad to say about him, but you know, it sounds like he's doing a job. Now, if you disagree with that, well, it's a petition drive. It doesn't say he should be recalled just because it's on the ballot. You get to decide. You, the voter. And I know you all are. You wouldn't be listening to the show, right? Because you're already motivated to be that way. And good for you. Okay. But here's what happens. If the recall campaign is successful, there's a possibility that Dylan, who is also running for re-election to a full two-year term at the same time in November, would be removed from office for less than 2 months. So the recall is, the way the petition was drawn, is to his, from his current term. His current term goes through December of this year. So he's reelected, if he is reelected in November on that same ballot, but also recalled, he'll go away for 2 months and then come back in January. So as our former Mayor Guido of Dearborn always said, we don't need term limits. We already have something called elections. And if you don't like the job somebody is doing, and this would be true in November, although it's sort of a victory for petitioners, I think, to get it on the ballot, even though if it passes and he is reelected at the same time, he'll only be out of office for 2 months. At least it shows the power of the people to get something on the ballot, okay, and to get somebody recalled. But if you really don't like anything or all the things that Representative Andy Dillon did and you prefer another candidate that's on the November ballot, and remember, there's probably going to be more than two. Oh, yeah. You know, there are parties other than the Democrats and Republicans, and they are legal, and they have people that are thinking people that also want to do the job for you. If you really want an alternative, well, that's what the station is about. I just need to remind you, there are more than two candidates probably in Dillon's district, and there's probably more than one other person that's up there running against him. And it's your job, therefore, to explore all the alternatives, all the options. Hey, they say opportunity knocks, okay, knocks on so many doors. Hey, if you got more doors, you got more opportunity, more doors to open that you're aware of, there's more knocking that might happen. You like that metaphor? I just thought of that. Mike Huckabee was on the Republican National Convention last night, actually 2 nights ago, making a speech. And he extended a metaphor, though, about desks, school desks, over and over and over. Running metaphor? Well, it was a running joke, finally. And you didn't want to hear about desks by the time he was done. And I like Governor Mike Huckabee and his presentation and his thoughtfulness and his sincerity. Don't agree with him on a lot of things. Love his support for the fair tax. If you don't know what that is, fairtax.org, you better look it up. Didn't happen in Michigan. No thanks to our legislature. The petition drive did not succeed. Why didn't you sign the petition? Why didn't you? I don't know. I didn't actually know there was one around here. But you can always get involved in these things. That's the whole idea. You, average person, somebody who is not listening to the show, talk to them. People can get involved with just a phone call or accessing the internet, which you can do at your public library, by the way, if you don't have that service at your home. And you can be part of a campaign to change things. Most people aren't, you know, but it only takes a few people to change things. There you go. Well, the recall campaign did not succeed, but something else did in regard to Detroit Mayor Kwame Kilpatrick. And I won't bore you with this, but I thought you'd like to get the national point of view on this from the distinguished New York Times. They've been covering every single day of the unbelievable twists and turns, as have many, many national media and TV news channels, the situation with Detroit Mayor Kwame Kilpatrick. Well, here it is, and you knew this because you keep up with all the news, but yesterday, Mayor Kwame M. Kilpatrick, pleaded guilty to felony charges and agreed to resign from office and serve 120 days in jail. For those that are math challenged, that is 30 into 124 months, okay, ending 8 months of political turmoil. After agreement, Governor Jennifer Granholm suspended her hearing into whether to remove Kilpatrick from misconduct, relieving her of being in the awkward position of possibly having to remove the mayor, a fellow Democrat, from office. The city council that will now try to bring stability to the nation's 11th largest city is known for its volatility. This is the New York Times, folks. So the story is not just rumors passed about in the area here. This is the assessment by people who can be objective, looking at the situation from far, far away, where they're not caught up in the emotions, they can just look at the facts. It's the nation's 11th largest city, and dropping fast from what I hear. People are moving out like crazy because there's nothing there that many of these people that move out going on. I mean, that's what they think. There's a lot going on in Detroit. Yes. The culture is there, the older homes that are kept up, some very nice neighborhoods, some shopping, not much. Schools are in trouble, but maybe that can be resolved somehow. At least if you're changing directions because you have a new mayor, you might have some hope for something better. But But the top two leaders from the city council, Ken Cockrell Jr., who will be the interim mayor, and Monica Conyers, who is becoming president of the council, were recently involved in a public shouting match. Some members of the council are also, just to add to the troubles here, are under federal investigation of possible payoffs involving a sewage contract. Cockrell, whose father, a civil rights activist, died in 1989 before he could achieve his own mayoral aspirations, and whose stepmother is a current council member. Oh boy, talk about paternalism there, huh? Said that chief among his responsibilities will be, quote, restoring the credibility of not only the mayor, but also the city of Detroit, unquote. Police Chief Ella Bully Cummings, that's an unfortunate hyphenated last name for a police chief, Bully Cummings, a mayoral appointee, announced her retirement after Kilpatrick's plea. Well, because in City of Detroit, police chiefs are appointed. Okay. And maybe that shouldn't happen. In other words, if they're appointed by the mayor, appointed by whom, too, appointed by the mayor, then, and it is, that's true in Dearborn, I think, although I guess any recommendation of the mayor's office has to be approved by the city council. I'm guessing who will hire our new police chief, or will it just be an appointment for the mayor? Is that a good idea, especially if there is a suggestion that the mayor's office is corrupt? Well, you've got your own appointee. You're doing, you know, doing your bidding, your favors, because you got them the job. And are you going to really investigate such things fully? You'd have a tendency, if not a disposition, not to do it. You know, not to investigate anything that had to do with the person that, you know, was responsible for getting you your job. So that is a problem. And in this case, if there's any questions about, I don't know, inappropriate use of their power or lack of investigations in the City of Detroit Police Department, now the new interim mayor, Ken Cockrell Jr., will be able to appoint his own choice. And then be responsible for that choice too, of course. And a host of other city officials are expected also to leave their jobs. It all adds up to a tremendous amount of tumult for poverty-stricken cities. According to the New York Times, today's paper, poverty-stricken city that had been experiencing glimmers of a renaissance after decades of population loss and decline. I guess I missed that. What were the glimmers of a renaissance? Gee, I wish there was more details here. The story ends in one more paragraph. I mean, I'm all for renaissance or a glimmer of renaissance, but I don't know what the glimmers of a renaissance were. The city is deeply in debt. The schools are deeply crippled, and hardly any, you know, highest, I think it's the highest of non-completion rate of students, that is the highest rate in a major urban area of students that drop out of high school before they ever get a degree. The highest foreclosure rate in the United States. The highest, or one of the highest, unemployment rates, over 15%, and that's just the official number of Detroit population are looking for work and can't find it. So there are just so many problems, and I know the foreclosures and the unemployment just started in the last couple of years. But we had some glimmers of a renaissance. They don't say when or what. And so it's nice to hear that someone, how far away is New York? 850 miles away, say that there were glimmers of renaissance some in recent years somewhere. I forget what that was. Kilpatrick's ordeal also leaves ripple effects in the form of aggravated racial tension between whites and blacks in the city and its suburbs at a time when the region is suffering through a serious economic turndown. And that was reported on Detroit Today also, is that one of the people talking about a renaissance, Craig Folley, WDET 101.9. I understand Detroit Today is available, as this show is available, on a podcast from WDET.org, I think. And so you can listen. It's a whole two-hour podcast, but you can catch that sometime. And the woman there was, you know, all these ideas. She lives in Detroit. She's fighting hard for Detroit. She says she's been confronted in stores and in group meetings What are you doing in the city? You get out. You're the problem. Because she's white. Okay? Clear racism there. And here she's trying to help the city, as I'm sure many people are, of all colors, creeds, and so on. You got to come together now, folks. Put aside those absolutely unrealistic recognitions of difference. Okay? They're superficial. Superficial. They're not super. They're super stupid if you judge people that way. But I don't have to lecture you on this. If you're listening to the show, you already know that. You're trying to find some different points of view here. So at this point, we are about 30 minutes into the new WHFR Journal. It's local news and views on the station making waves, WHFR.FM, from Henry Ford Community College. Not necessarily representing the views of anyone here at Henry Ford Community College. Well, we thought in terms of views, one of the best people that we featured on almost every show here, because he has these audio clips that you can listen to from VoteNader.com, VoteNader.org. He's not a communist. I mean, he's not a, and also he's not into it for commercial benefit, that's for sure. Here's what Ralph Nader has to say about the Republicans this week and their platform and their expressions of where they stand on the issues. And it's a very interesting comparison, because Ralph is very smart, and he's older than John McCain. He remembers how things used to be accurately. He does his research. Quite a brilliant man, quite a genius. You may disagree with some of the things he says, but here, you want to be stimulated. Yeah, here's Ralph Nader, which with his audio comment for today.
This is Ralph Nader. In recent weeks, I've been making the point that if voters don't condition their vote on some response by the candidates to the priority issues on the voters' minds, every 4 years, both parties will become worse, because 24/7, the corporate lobbies are pulling on both parties, and if voters who are liberal or progressive are not pulling in the other way to make the least worst candidate accord with the important priorities favored by a majority of the American people, then the corporate interests have a pull without any pull in the other direction. And you know where that leads. I was reading the other day some of the policies by Richard Nixon and Gerald Ford in the 1970s. Richard Nixon, for example, besides signing into law with enthusiastic statements the EPA bill, the OSHA bill, the Product Safety Commission bill, among other legislation that we pressed through Congress in those heady days, he offered a policy on drugs in the streets and addiction that emphasized rehabilitation of drug addicts, not incarceration in prison. He proposed a health insurance plan that observers say was better than the Clinton plan. He supported and articulated a minimum income plan to move the country toward abolishing poverty. No other president has done that since. And he favored, vocally, the voting rights for the disenfranchised citizens of the District of Columbia. Can you imagine a president today demanding an excess profit tax on the oil companies and demanding higher fuel efficiency for motor vehicles in no uncertain terms? Well, that's what President Gerald Ford did following Richard Nixon in the 1970s. See what I mean about both parties getting worse when we as voters freak out, vote for the least worst, and let the least worst be pulled by the corporate interest closer to the worst every 4 years. This is Ralph Nader.
And that's available from votenader.org/audio. Or just go to the website and you'll see the place where you can click on that. Every day, 5 days a week, he, even if it's on his cell phone or whatever that he sends to their website server or whatever, or part of a speech that he makes, and he made several excellent long speeches this week that, of course, were not covered on television, not covered on the news anywhere. Okay. Well, the Republican convention was going on. You don't cover Ralph Nader. Okay. Well, they covered Ron Paul on Tuesday all day long on C-SPAN 2. He had a big convention of his own in St. Paul at the Target Center. Or was it Minneapolis? I always get those two cities confused. Either it was in St. Paul, but last night I heard that that he was speaking in Minneapolis. Well, in any event, the Republican National Convention was in, I guess, Minneapolis. And I believe he was in the so-called Target Center, which is not Target Shopping Center. It's a huge convention center, and it holds 12,000 people. So it's a big auditorium, right? I don't know where they play basketball there or something else, but it's a big, big auditorium. And Ron Paul, one of the Republican nominees for the Republican presidential nomination, he packed the place, okay? And CNN carried, on CNN, C-SPAN 2, carried it all day, including a speech on Tuesday night. And all kinds of people were there supporting him, and talking positively, including Jesse Ventura, the former governor of Minnesota, independent. Imagine, they actually elected somebody who was not a Democrat and Republican to governor, and then he found out he couldn't govern. Why? It's very interesting, and I'll mention Ron Paul, I'll get back to him, but Jesse Ventura said he had to sort of not run again after his first term because the people weren't behind him. That's right, the people that elected him said, oh, he's governor, he can do whatever he wants to, now he's got all the power. No, he would send requests for different bills and laws to be passed by the legislature in Minnesota, and the Democrats and Republicans there said, huh, heck with you, you're not one of our party. And then when they, you know, rejected his initiatives, which were ideas that he had been elected on, that was part of his platform, what he was going to do for the people, he couldn't get it done because the people then wouldn't threaten to kick the bums out of office in the legislature. Because if they would have just knocked out a few of the leaders in the next election, they might have got the idea that they might want to work and collaborate in a nonpartisan way with the independent governor. Because he was elected governor because of these unique ideas. By the way, how did they find out about him? Because he was allowed to get into the debates. He had almost no recognition except for his name as a wrestler, Jesse Ventura. But in terms of people desiring him to be their governor, 3%, 4%, he got into the debates. Because they're not regulated by the same Democrat-Republican organization that controls our national presidential debates now. How did that happen? Well, the Dems and Republicans passed a law saying that that's the only way it can be done, and the people on the commission get there because they're appointed by Dems and Republicans. And then they set up these huge restrictions to keep people of other political parties who are legal candidates for the office of president or whatever off the ballot, out of the debate. So one of Ralph Nader's concerns, as it is Ron Paul's too, and the Green Party, that's right, the Green Party, United States of America, is to open up the ballot so you have more candidates, more points of view, and the people can get more involved. You can't believe the two parties that are saying pretty much the same thing about everything. I mean, really, if you think there's significant differences between Dems and Republicans in terms of how they have acted once elected, you know, that is quite a hallucination, my friends, and no insult intended. But that is a state of mind that I can only think about. Okay, my brain won't let me be aware of those radical differences between the Dems and the Republicans. They are not in practice. Despite what they say, they're not in practice. Of course, they're inconsistent from year to year and day to day also. Whether it's John McCain, Barack Obama, they said Kerry was a flip-flopper, well, he really wasn't. But, you know. So Ron Paul was covered all day long on C-SPAN 2. And if you have cable, some people don't, but you could have watched Ron Paul. And even though, oh, guess what? He didn't speak at the Republican convention. Now, Mike Huckabee was the second largest vote getter, and they did ask him to speak, even though he was as he said on Jon Stewart's The Daily Show last night, he didn't use this word, but I will, he was jerked around. Yeah, he was pulled from one day to the next day. He didn't know what day he was going to speak. I know Gustav, the hurricane, came up, and Monday they sort of called off the convention. But it was only token recognition there, and they put on all the Republican Party wannabes, so supposedly whichever side you were on. But not Ron Paul. Oh, no, he's against the war. He wants to change the system. He knows how corrupt the present system is, the banking system, the economic system, and he's got ideas, whether you agree with him or not. He's got a book out, too. It's called The Revolution, a manifesto. Ron Paul. Okay? Might want to read that. I mean, just to challenge yourself. What do you think? Well, I'm not a Republican. Well, he's not necessarily, he's certainly not a middle-of-the-road Republican, and he wasn't invited to speak. Oh, my gosh. He might point out his differences. And the Republican Party has come a long way, and it has changed, as Ralph Nader was pointing out. Gerry Ford, who was from Michigan, as president, he proposed gasoline mileage regulations, increases in the mileage of cars, and rationing. And, of course, because there was quite a crisis. I remember the 1970s, quite a crisis with gasoline. And our government tried to act to do something responsibly. Today, you don't want to regulate the auto industry. Oh, no. You don't want to do the right thing in regard to anything. Because whatever you do, you're going to be criticized. And you don't want to be criticized. No. You might take away a few votes from the dummies. Anyway, sorry if you are a voter for a Dem or Republican. I know that you do it. You must do it for really good reasons. Most people don't. They're very rational. There's a good book out called The Myth of the Rational Voter. Just came out last year. A political scientist wrote it. A lot of research. Most people vote for the craziest of reasons and, you know, that's our democracy. Don't you love it? And that's fine. But we would all hope that you would use your vote, if you do go vote, in a more rational way. Which means look at all the issues, look at the facts. It's very confusing, very complex, and then make the best decision. But also look at all your choices. You got more than two. Okay? Always more than two. If you think you only have two choices in any situation, you're doing yourself, and in this case, your country, a disservice. Yep. Ralph Nader, last night, couldn't get on C-SPAN 2. He had a rally all day long in Minneapolis. He had an auditorium. I don't know how many people were in it. I had to watch it from what looked like a cell phone quality video connection on the internet through his website. Because they didn't get covered, didn't get clips on any news channel. It was an all-day-long rally. He gave a great speech last night. He had Jesse Ventura there again. He had the Green Party people there again, because Ralph was the Green Party nominee for president back in 2000, by the way. But all the third-party people. I was surprised a libertarian other than Jesse Ventura, who was kind of a libertarian independent, also didn't have any libertarian there, because libertarians do have their own candidate. Bob Barr and Wayne Allen Root are the candidates for Libertarian president and vice president this year. And we do hope to get some connections with some of these alternative choice candidates, even if they are at the national level. This is a local show. We're making waves, though, and we want to fill you in on the fact that you do have significant choices. And we were lucky enough 4 years ago, although currently do not have a volunteer news director here at WHFR to assist me, we made a lot of phone calls, and we had the Libertarian candidate for president and also the Green Party candidate for president, and a whole one-hour-long interview. We feature an hour for each of them. But there's a lot of local candidates running on the Green Party and the Libertarian Party ballot, and you'll see their names. It's different for every district, of course, but we hope to get a few of them on here in the next 6 weeks, because it's only 6 weeks in November. Now, if you have a chance to go to votenator.org, There are clips there of his speeches, and I don't know if last night's speech is up there, but there's clips from speeches he made during the Democratic National Convention, too. And so listen to him, watch him in detail. He is a brilliant person, very smart. Doesn't mean you have to agree with him, but I hope you can respect the fact he's done his research. He's not just spouting off based on emotions. He's got strong emotions, that's for sure, but they're based on heavily researched facts and a comprehensive awareness of 40 years, 50 years almost, of public service, of being involved at this level. And you can't say that about any of the other candidates. Not John McCain, not Sarah Palin, not Barack Obama, not even Joe Biden, who's been in the Senate for a long time. By the way, Jim Hightower, and we have a little commentary from Jim Hightower to sneak in this hour, too. He wrote, although didn't record this, but he was so incensed Thursday that Jeff Greenfield, who is a CBS political commentator, described Sarah Palin's speech as a perfect populist pitch. That was Sarah Palin's vice presidential acceptance speech Wednesday night. Okay, Jim Hightower is one of the great populist commentators. He's never run for office, I don't believe, although Ralph Nader said he should run for president. Ralph Nader said Jim Hightower should run for president. I will mention, and it's not a plug, but if you want to know more about Jim Hightower, of course, go to jimhightower.com, Jim Hightower, H-I-G-H, Tower. .com. His current book is called Swim Against the Current. Fighting those waves. He's making waves in reverse, okay? Because he said, and I love the subtitle, Swim Against the Current. The subtitle is, even a dead fish can go with the flow. So you want to be a dead fish? Or you want to make waves and swim against the current? Make waves of your own. That's right on target with our WHFR slogan here. Well, he says about this speech, besides saying Jeff Greenfield is wrong, since he is one of the most preeminent in the classic tradition of populists, he says, excuse me, but real populists don't support profiteering schemes of big oil or embrace the extension and expansion of tax giveaways to Wall Street speculators and corporate chieftains. Palin might claim to be a pit bull in lipstick, but she's damn sure no populist. Oops, I'm quoted Jim Hightower there. And she's very sure, let me say that. As Greenfield must surely know in his less infatuated moments, she is to populism what near beer is to beer, only not as close. Indeed, she's the candidate of the plutocrats. Mary Ellen Leese, a real hell-raising populist from the 1880s and 90s, would be appalled at the media's perversion of this historic and proud term. So here's Jim Hightower and his commentary for this week, and you can probably guess mortgage crisis continues.
Housing debt has become a financial cluster bomb. At first, boom, it hit those low-income folks who had been lured into subprime mortgages they didn't understand and couldn't afford. Not to worry, said Wall Street hucksters and Washington officials, we've got that little problem contained. Not exactly. Boom! The next wave shattered the dreams of more upscale homeowners whose mortgages contained exploding interest rates. And now, boom! The latest ones hit are those who've been enticed by bankers to take out equity loans on their homes. These are essentially second mortgages on the value of the home. And this dicey financial move has been driven hard the last 20 years or so by the marketing departments of big banks. Rather than encouraging customers to pay off their housing debt and own their homes free and clear, the banks urged people to take out second loans on their homes in order to buy a car or take a vacation. The bankers even went on the road to teach people how to cash in on their homes, and an advertising blitz was launched to make it all sound painless. Live richly was the slogan of a billion-dollar ad campaign by Citibank, adding that your home is your ticket to anything your heart desires. Don't sit on your equity, scolded another. Turn it into cash. In short time, this promise of free money piled up $1 trillion in added debt on the backs of millions of homeowners. It was a bonanza for the banks, which pocketed billions of dollars in fees for extending this additional credit. However, with home values plummeting and the economy tanking, the banker's boom has become the borrower's bust. Hundreds of thousands of Americans now can't pay off these equity loans, and they face losing their homes, which will further depress housing prices across the country, setting off other bombs. This is Jim Hightower saying, once again, we learn that when bankers say, live richly, they're only talking about themselves.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publisher of Hightower's new book, Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow, now available wherever books are sold.
More than 100,000 people in Michigan, 30,000 of which are children. The Epilepsy Foundation of Michigan exists to ensure these individuals and their families receive the resources and support necessary to live normal and productive lives. As the only statewide nonprofit organization that focuses entirely on seizure disorders, the Epilepsy Foundation of Michigan enhances lives and changes communities by making it easier for people with epilepsy to live in society. Whether through its programs such as Camp Discovery, Living Well with Epilepsy, or Epilepsy Entertainment Gatherings, the Epilepsy Foundation of Michigan sets out each day to act as ambassadors for those coping with this condition. For more information regarding these and other programs, volunteer opportunities, or how to donate, feel free to visit the Foundation's website at www.epilepsymichigan.org. The Epilepsy Foundation of Michigan, not another moment lost to seizures.
The Center for Lifelong Learning at Henry Ford Community College offers educational alternatives. Options include upgrading job skills, new career tracks, professional development, continuing education, or personal enrichment. And classes are affordable. Call to register at 313-317-1500. Henry Ford Community College, your best choice, guaranteed.
Get ready for an experience that is truly out of this world. WHFR proudly presents Space Week, September 14th to the 20th. Each and every WHFR DJ will take you on their own personal trip through space as they mix up their own show with some aspect of space as the theme. You can expect to hear anything and everything related to space, so hold on tight and make sure to tune in September 14th through the 20th right here on WHFR.FM, your space for unique programming.
Yes, that's coming up really soon. We don't have to worry. This show is always spaced out anyway, so don't have to do too much different here. WHFR.FM, we're making waves. By the way, Frank Bewick's column in the Times-Herald from this last Wednesday, he also is talking about the issues of the Dems and Republicans and Obama and McCain and their position on issues. And one of his conclusions is, and I won't go into great detail because it wasn't his total conclusion. There's always exceptions to any generalization. But he didn't feel there was that much difference between Obama and McCain and the Republican and Democratic positions on issues. And that isn't good. I mean, first of all, it doesn't give you much to choose from, does it? Just down to a question of personalities. Personality won't solve our problems. I mean, it's nice to have one, but it won't solve the problems. I mean, I really liked Ronald Reagan's speeches before he got elected. Interestingly, not after. And I did disagree with most everything he did after he got elected. But personality, I wish I could have got to meet him. What a great guy. Fun at parties and the barbecue and so on. Speaking of barbecues, one of the voices that I listen to a lot is the Catholic Peace Movement. I'm not even a practicing Catholic anymore, but I am a pacifist, and that transcends all religions, or is part of all religions, I'd like to believe. But they have a newspaper, probably have to be a member of Pax Christi. But I think you could, it's published from Pax Christi USA, you know, Peace of Christ, Pax Christi USA, Erie, Pennsylvania. And it's a great informative newspaper with many ideas, and in fact, a lot of people wouldn't believe the Catholic Church had so many activists in it, or any activist at all. And they do. And I do believe, although Pax Christi USA looks like it has its office in Erie, Pennsylvania. Ooh, that's Erie. It actually started, if I'm not mistaken, the history of Pax Christi began in Detroit. There was a Father Thomas Hinsberg, who actually was my reverend minister teacher in college. And that he was the one that began Pax Christi, which is the pacifist movement within the Catholic Church to organize and to bring about the end to war. Imagine war, not forever and ever, but stop it right now, as soon as possible. Everybody, everywhere, stop fighting. Arthur J. Goldberg, who was appointed to be our UN ambassador back in the early 60s. By John Kennedy, I believe. The greatest quote ever, and so true, so true. Let it go around in your head and around. The only way to stop fighting is to stop fighting. Everybody, right now, stop it. Well, how are you going to do that? Well, this whole idea of the war on terror being going to go on forever is wrong, wrong, wrong. Killing people. I thought that was the first principle of all those commandments, thou shalt not kill. No qualifier after that, except in times of war, or except if it's a terrorist, or except if it's somebody you don't like. I mean, there's no exception to that rule, folks. No qualification. Okay? No situational context. Thou shalt not kill. Basic principle of Judeo-Christian tradition, and in many other religions, too. In all irony, I'll say God bless them all. Okay. But here's a little article that I'll just finish up the show with. Coming up next, Joanne Karczynska. And wow, it's going to be a great Highway 61 show today for 4 hours driving down Highway 61. Sharon Wallenberg, and this is just the environment section of the Catholic Peace Voice newspaper from Pax Christi. That is, by the way, Pax Christi, Christi USA.org. Pax is, of course, P-A-X. Okay, spell it all. P-A-X C-H-R-I-S-T-I USA.org. Okay. Sharon Wallenberg writes on the environment page in the current issue of Catholic Peace Worker, Catholic Peace Voice. More trees, less meat can help the climate crisis. Eat less meat. Such was the personal recommendation of, I knew I'd get into this, Rajendrak Pachuri, chairman of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, IPCC, and EndNote speaker of the United Nations Annual Department of Public Information Non-Governmental Organizations Conference on Climate Change. Not get that? Non-governmental. Didn't have to do with all this political stuff. Actually got scientists together to discuss issues without a partisan context. Amazing but true. And it happened last September. Takes a while to get this stuff in the newspapers, doesn't it? Eat less meat. The United Nations conference focused on the urgent challenge of global climate change, its causes from human activities, and our collective and individual responsibility in addressing its potentially devastating effects. Recent findings have left no doubt that the warming of climate is directly linked to human activity. Warmer climate is caused by carbon dioxide and methane, greenhouse gases in the atmosphere resulting from transportation, energy, mechanized farming, and deforestation, among other causes. Of all causes, the livestock sector generates the most greenhouse gas emissions. Okay, raising the cattle, the sheep, the pigs. According to a UN Food and Agriculture Organization report, global warming melts polar ice caps and mountain glaciers, causing increases in sea levels that threaten coastal areas and small nations. Tsunamis, hurricanes, earthquakes, droughts, and floods have been scientifically linked to carbon dioxide emissions. There is a deep injustice in climate change. Rich countries grow richer while causing the problem. The poorest countries are the most affected and have the least responsibility for the causes. Food, water, and security issues are exacerbated by the droughts and floods brought on by global warming. Meat production does more to cause global warming than any other source. The massive amount of animal feces, can I say that on radio? Feces, produced in factory farms is the largest source of airborne methane in the United States. Methane traps heat in the atmosphere almost 25 times more effectively, which is not good news, than carbon dioxide does. Animals raised for food in the United States produce 130 times more excrement, can you say that on the radio, than the entire human population does, 86,000 pounds per second. I hate to be the one that had to calculate that. Wow. A typical pig factory generates a raw waste equal to that of a city of 50,000 people, but without the sewage system. The runoff from factory farms pollutes rivers and lakes more than all other industrial sources combined. Of all agricultural land in the U.S., nearly 80% is used to raise animals for food. 80% of all agricultural land. So you want more corn? You got to get the animals off some of the land. How to do that? Again, your own choice. I'm summarizing now quickly. We're at the end of our time, folks. This is something to consider. And in fact, becoming more vegetarian. You don't have to become, you don't have to stop eating that steak, but maybe you don't want to eat it every night. Or that hamburger. Maybe every other day? Try it. You know, just like with the gas crisis. Can you get to work? Can you not use your car one day a week and still get by? You know, this is extremely important.